You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, you better believe it. It's Wednesday, the 24th of April, 2024. This is TNT, today's News Talk. Let me fiddle about with the settings on my screen. There we go. Yeah, I'm Rick Munn, and whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, of course, whatever you're doing, we hope it's nice, we hope it's legal, we hope it's fulfilling. Welcome. Welcome to TNT. We've got a lot on the plate today to get through. If you're listening in from wherever on our website, tntradio.live, we have a chat function on there, a very lively live chat function on there. So please feel free to log in, leave us your thoughts, comments, opinions, suggestions, whatever. And I will do my best to have a scan over that during the duration of the next 2 hours and pick up on any comments that you have left for me on there. What's on the show today? You might be wondering. Well, of course, jam-packed, full of information and guests. I'm going to be talking to Gemma Cooper, of course, and both of those hours are news correspondent on the breaking news stories of the day here in the UK and Ireland. In the first hour, I'm going to be joined by Jason Leo Satos. Great guy. He's an author, he's an artist, he's a political commentator, and he's the host of the Project Humanity talk show. He's going to be joining me about 20 past the hour here in the first hour. Basil Valentine, of course, will be vivisecting the news in the UK political and further afield with me at the end of the first hour. In the second hour, Philip Dwyer will be joining me from Ireland. Philip is a citizen journalist, and he's also running as a candidate in the EU elections, the upcoming EU elections for the Ireland First Party. So we're going to get a little bit of a breakdown on what he's been up to since the last time we spoke, and what he sees the future holding for Ireland, at least in the short term, given the new leadership under Simon Harris-Taoiseach and his band of ghouls that he has surrounded himself with, of course, one of which being the scourge of Ireland, Helen McEntee. How she's still in a job, is absolutely beyond me. And then to finalise the show, at the end of the second hour, Tim Hinchliffe will be beaming in from Colombia in South America. He is the editor of the Sociable website. We're going to be talking about all things CBDC, predictive programming, AI, etc. All the stuff that's probably been going on behind the scenes that you're not aware of, developments. Tim keeps a very close eye on that business. So we will be looking at it during the course of the second hour. Another thing, lest I forget, there is a What's On section on our website, tntradio.live, and there are two festivals coming up in the month of May, which is great if you're living in the UK, specifically up in and around the Lake District area. There is the Weekend Truth Festival running from the 3rd to the 5th of May, and then Stand in the Light Music Festival between the 24th and the 27th of May. So if you're in the area, or even if you feel like making a journey and supporting these great events, go to our website, tntradio.live, check out the What's On section, and you'll get the details there. You can go from that point. So a lot happening. I was going to waffle on a little bit solo here, a cappella, but I think it's best we're talking in harmony rather than me doing a monologue here. So we'll bring Jem in just a second, and a lot to talk about this morning, no doubt about it, here on TNT, today's news talk.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's news talk radio, TNT.
Gemma, I have, I've highlighted a few bits and bobs here as well to dig into as well. I'll bat it over to you first. You can throw out what you got in the old news bag this morning, and then we'll either break into it or supplement it a tad. There's a lot going on, as I'm sure people are aware.
Well, so much is breaking this morning. I mean, first up, of course, Jeffrey Donaldson, the former leader of the Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland, has appeared in court charged with rape and other sexual offences. His wife has also been charged with aiding and abetting those offences. They deny the charges. They've appeared at Newry Magistrates Court this morning. Huge, huge media presence and profile outside Newry Magistrates. This will obviously be the first hearing in court where the charges will be read out, and then it will be just straight referred to Crown Court because the charges are so serious. Magistrates don't deal with offences, allegations like this. Some people were shouting questions at Jeffrey Donaldson as he walked into court. I'm not quite sure what the nature of those questions were, but obviously this is a story we'll follow on TNT right the way through to its conclusion on the verdict that the court case that delivers on this case. Obviously, the DUP have suspended him pending what the end of the results of the court case are. He may be found guilty, he may be found innocent. He denies all of the charges levelled against him. Also, two Premier League footballers in the UK have also been arrested in connection with an allegation of rape. Both players are 19. Both players are at the same club. We're not naming the club because they've only been arrested, not charged. So identification can't happen at this time. I understand the club concern, though, has been approached and they're not commenting. So we'll keep an eye on that story. And also, we've seen some extraordinary scenes, Rick, come out of central London in the last few hours. Five household cavalry horses, which were undergoing routine exercises, as they do every day in central London. The household cavalry, part of the King's Guard, very historic, attracts a lot of tourists. Something spooked the horses. We don't know what it is. They're highly trained army horses. They don't get spooked. They ran amok through central London. One of them, a couple of them, were covered in blood. Very distressing scenes. The riders were thrown. All horses have now been rounded up. Army horse boxes have arrived and the horses are off to see the vets. Five people injured. I would suspect those are the five riders that were thrown. But extraordinary scenes. Never has the capital seen anything like that. So we're keeping a close eye on that to find out what spooked these horses that are highly military trained animals. What happened in the capital today to allow this to happen? So some big stories doing the rounds at the moment here on TNT in the UK.
There is indeed, actually. And the Donaldson one obviously is something that we talked about right from the get-go. In fact, we didn't name the name, but on the morning that he was actually, the morning after he was actually arrested, we were speculating on that. And then just after the show finished, it was a Friday, it came out that yes, it was Jeffrey Donaldson. Now, some other details that are coming out about this case as well. Gemma, this is being reported this morning in the Belfast Telegraph over here in Northern Ireland. So Sir Jeffrey Donaldson has had his bail conditions relaxed as he appeared at Newry Magistrates Court. So the ex-DUP leader was in the dock for a first appearance this morning. So as you rightly say, humongous media attention in this one. And in fact, I think they had to reserve a lot of seats in the galleries to allow the press to come in on this one. Given the significant media public presence and the video link ahead of the hearing, Eamon King warned that any potential recording of the proceedings would see the online broadcast stopped. So what do we know, or what further details have came out about this? Well, apparently these are allegations that span a 20-year period. That's another thing. And we've said about this before, this is being labelled as a in the past crime, alleged crime, or an in the past sex offence. Listen, it's a sex offence. It doesn't matter if it happened yesterday, the day before, or 10 years ago. The fact of the matter is, I don't like this language. It's a historic thing. It's something that happened 20 or 30 years ago. It happened. That's all there is to it. And I think that diminishes the severity and the seriousness of the crime when you start to apply the word historic to it. It still happened irrespective of when it happened. So the charges relate to two complaints. So there are two people that have came forward making allegations alleged to occur between January the 1st, 1985 and the 31st of December, 1991. And interestingly, his wife, Lady Eleanor Donaldson, also appeared with aiding and abetting rape and indecent assaults, as well as two counts of cruelty to a person under the age of 16. So, more information is coming out. They, of course, strenuously deny these charges. They have to have their day in court. It has to go through due process. But starting to add a little bit of, more substance to these attacks, when they happened, how long they happened over, the extent of the crime. So there's obviously something going on there, Gemma, at least enough to warrant them appearing this morning in Newry Magistrates Court.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you don't bring court appearances unless you think you have enough evidence to charge someone and you think there's a fair chance of winning. And the Northern Irish equivalent of the Crown Prosecution Service here in England will decide on that. In Scotland, it would have been the Procurator Fiscal. It all gets presented before it gets taken to court. You know, otherwise anyone can make an allegation about anyone and everything would end up in court. And that's not how the judicial system works. You have to amass a case before you can take it to court. And I do think the level of press interest this this morning, and it wasn't just press. I think there were members of the public filming on their phones. Mm. Questions were being fired at Jeffrey Donaldson, not just from the media, I think, but from assembled interested parties. I mean, you think he was until very recently the leader of a major political party. It's like Rishi Sunak being charged. It's like Donald Trump, or, well, Donald Trump has a fair amount of allegations thrown at him. It's like Biden. He is the leader of a political party in a country. There's serious allegations, huge level of press and public interest, obviously, because we pay politicians' wages. And of course, much has been made of his achievements in political office. Well, that's completely null and void if he's found guilty of the very serious charges thrown at him. And I think the public interest in this case, once it has been referred up to the Crown Court judicial system, where he'll face a jury, and the allegations and the charges and the more details come out in court, I think the level of interest in this case will be global. And depending on what comes out, what the witnesses say, and how he defends himself in the court process. But certainly a very significant story for Northern Ireland, as reflected in the level of interest outside the courtroom this morning. It was a scrum, a media scrum, the like of which we don't often see anymore, unless it's politicians. So this story is going to be ongoing. And we'll have more later on the details of the charges read out in magistrates. And he'll obviously confirm his own details. It'll be a very short hearing. It's purely a committal hearing, but one with a lot of interest around it, Rick.
Yeah, and another thing that he has requested was sources say Donaldson's legal team are applying or have applied to have bail conditions altered so that he can live with his wife. So I need to double check this, because I literally just pulled this up before we came on air, but I can check it. That maybe we can check this for the second hour, Gemma. But one of the conditions was he left the country immediately. On the Friday morning, he flew to London, where he was believed staying in a residence in Westminster. His wife continued to live on in the marital home in just outside Dromore in County Down here in Northern Ireland. So part of the conditions, following the arrest was they couldn't be in contact with each other. They couldn't live together. So he wants that to be relaxed since being freed. As we said, he's been living at an address in the Greenwich area of London. However, it's understood that he has requested to have his bail conditions varied so the couple can resume contact with each other. So, this is a strange one, because obviously he's been charged. It's went to the position that it's at today. Does he get to make these requests and demands, before he's had his due process? I want to live with my wife again. I want to be back with her again. What leg does he have to stand on when it comes to that, if any?
Well, that would be unusual, I think. I would imagine that the judge would refuse those bail conditions because they're two defendants. And so the last thing you want once a political, a judicial process is ongoing is communication between defendants. It's now up to the legal teams and not the defendants behind closed doors to come up with a version of events. I'd be surprised. You can request what you want when it comes to bail conditions. I very much doubt that will get granted. I may be wrong. The judicial process hasn't been committed yet to Crown Court. It may be when the Crown Court proceedings start that the witnesses are kept apart, which is normal. I don't know. Unusual request. Yeah. See what the judge says.
And just in closing on this one, yesterday as well, in the build-up to this, there was speculation on whether or not this case would be fast-tracked, whether or not it went to court, took a priority over other cases. I believe the word in the street is, don't quote me on this one, is that it won't, that there will be no preferential treatment given in this case. And it could be at least next Christmas, as in Christmas 2025, possibly at the earliest, before this does go to court. So it'll be a very long, drawn-out wait for this possibly to see its day in court. And then, of course, when it does go to court, Gemma, who knows how long the case could actually last for. It could drag on for months and months and months. So that's bad for the people, the alleged victims. I'm thinking about them here in particular, not so much the alleged perpetrators. So it's a nasty one. And of course, he's still, he might be out of the DUP, but he still hasn't quit his seat as a Laggan-Bally MP, which is odd. So he's strenuously denying it. That's his words and not mine. And like everything, as we always attach the old mantra, time will tell. time is a great revealer of all things in these things, Gemma. So let's see what happens over the next hour if we have any more news on that. And maybe we can do another little update in the second hour. But in the meantime, thank you very much for bringing that one to us this morning. And we've got to take a break now. And welcome the first guest of the day, Jason Leosatos, to take the stand here at TNT. We'll be right back.
TNT. Sonia Poulton.
If the British courts take the USA's poor application seriously and extradite Julian Assange, they will almost certainly have blood on their hands. Those are my words, not Stella's, although I know she thinks the same. She said so. The court has refused to address the very credible evidence that the CIA planned to kidnap and assassinate Julian Assange. We should all remember this moment the next time the UK or the USA dare to claim we are a free society while lecturing other countries about their lack of press freedoms. Julian Assange has been denied his freedom for 15 years. The entire process has been his punishment.
Sonia Poulton
on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Oh, we're live. Yeah, I'm just getting some love from my next guest and very happy to receive it. I am too. The one and only Jason Leosatos is joining me this morning live. He is an author, he's an artist, and he's also a political commentator and the host of the Project Humanity talk show with none other than Jason Leosatos. Jason, how are you doing this fine spring morning?
I'm doing very well. My answer is the same to everyone asks me that. As well as one can be in this global casino mental asylum that's become normal. That's what I normally say. So if you felt normal and really balanced, you'd have to worry about yourself. However, we must do our best to actually manifest that great peace and harmony within ourselves, which, as you know, I talk a lot about.
You do. You know what? I was having a trawl through your Twitter feed this morning, and you know you're covering different events, and I cover different events as well. And yesterday, a young lad who's now based in Mexico asked me to come on a podcast. He was doing a podcast, so we were just talking about world in general, how to get through, how to keep an even keel these days. And one of the things that you wrote yesterday, actually, and this has nothing to do with the news, but I think it's important to bring this up, and it got no attention at all. You know, when you post about death and maiming, everybody retweets it, likes it, forwards it, comments on it. But when you put a nugget of wisdom out there and a little bit of a nudge towards inner peace and harmony, no one gives a damn. And I think it's only right that we should highlight that this morning, at least give it some oxygen. You wrote this yesterday, and this is your words. I wish everybody a day full of peace and happiness and strength, which is a lovely thing to say. But then you go into a little bit more detail. You said, all of which are with you all the time, but they so often get smothered by our rush and our anxiety. Practice writing truths on a small piece of paper, keep it in your pocket, and read it often during the day. So whilst it's great to wish people love, peace, and you know, tranquility through the day, I think the important part of that message was, listen, that stuff is with you. That stuff's with you every day, but you can smother it and choke it and asphyxiate it with exposing yourself to all the other stuff that's going on in the world at the minute. We need to make sure we take the pillow off the head of peace, love, and tranquility, I think, and not toxify ourselves by exposure to all this garbage that's happening.
Oh, well said, Rick. Can you unleash me? Shall I just go? Boom.
Go.
Go. So That's my whole gig, really. And you know, Rick, I used to talk a lot about that years ago. I've said this before on shows, but I was more of a sort of Eckhart Tolle type person, where I used to just talk about finding peace, happiness, joy, and strength within oneself, which, as you said, is always there. It's not something you have to try and get. It's something you've already got, but it's covered over by a lot of madness, anxiety, stress, fear, and bills, and being a human being in a spacesuit on the planet. I mean, come on, it's not easy, you know? So, but then I realized, Rick, I couldn't just talk about that unless I talked about one of some of the things that take it away or thwart it, which is living in a global casino mental asylum of debt, bills, fear, based on power, short-term greed, struggle, and profit, which seems to choke that off and smother that, as you said, like a pillow on one's face. And that's a tragedy. It really, really is. The dichotomy is that it's the pillow on one's face that often can bring people back to awareness and consciousness. St. John of Patmos apparently used to hold people's heads under the water when he baptized them until they were struggling so much they nearly died, and he'd let them up. And then they'd have another realization and an awakening, if you like, for want of a better word. But yeah, I think that's what I had to do. So I'm more in the middle now. I talk about, I try and explain to people, like you do very well, brilliantly, as TNT Radio fantastically does, showing people what it is. What is this monster that makes us feel so intrinsically terrible? But I think the sad thing is, Rick, is that most people don't feel those feelings and then understand where they come from. And many people, pre-lockdown, Rick, I used to get a lot of people in my gallery in Totnes coming in and saying, Jason loves the way, you know, you mustn't look at anything negative. Those same people after lockdown, and now them knowing what the government's up to, will come in crying and fall into my arms. Because, and I say to them, it's not a negative thing to look at the system and the reality of the nuts and bolts of the system of government we've got, which automatically chokes us in debt. It's designed for that, to keep us from being free and finding our true potential as humanity, which is tremendous. Like, I could go into that all day. But it's not horrible to see that. Actually, it's very liberating to see that, because when you see how it's designed, Rick, then you realize why you feel like you feel. So it sort of lets you off the hook. So if people say to me, what, yeah, you mean to tell me it wasn't my fault I was depressed all my life and frustrated and anxious and worried? It was it's the system I'm living in. That was a natural symptom, actually, from a healthy body, mind, and spirit, born into a system that's literally driving it mad on a daily, moment-to-moment basis. It really, really is. And that's a big subject, but that is, we've got to see that. And then it's liberating, because people say, oh my God, now I know I felt like that, you know? And then we try and retrieve ourselves and recover. So I think humanity's in recovery, Rick. And also, I've said many times on this show, I think, about the new epoch, which I write about in my book. And an epoch in Greek means stoppage. That's what the word means. And that sounds strange, because most people think, oh, epoch is something new. Yeah, but it does mean stoppage in Greek. And the analogy I give is when in a pregnancy, when the pregnancy stops and the birth begins, that's the new epoch. So that's where we are now, I believe, personally and spiritually and as humanity. We're in a new epoch, and we know that something's wrong. We know we're being suppressed. We know our true happiness and magnificence is being suppressed within us by the system we live in. And it's very tricky to be in the system every day and be happy and be enthusiastic and remember that. But that's why I keep chucking those little things into Twitter and in my writing, because that's what I used to talk about the most. And that's what I'm really passionate about. And that's what my book's about, is that very thing, you know, and also telling people why they feel like that. It's a huge subject. There you go. I've had a little rant.
Well, that's a good way to start off as any. And in fact, it's well timed, because we've got to take a little headline break. And what I think we'll do is we'll take it right now. And I'm like, I suppose it struck a chord with me this morning, because when I read your words, I read the Bible as much as I can. And there's a parable in Luke's gospel talks about the sower and the seed. And one of the seeds, it says, it fell on four types of ground, and one of the types of ground that the seed fell on was thorny ground. So initially the seed grew up and started to bloom and blossom, but then it says that thorns and weeds choked it and it became unfruitful. And then that likens that to the curse of this world and the lusts of the flesh and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and make it unprofitable. And I think that was really what resonated with me with what you were saying. We have this peace and tranquility within ourselves. It's there every day. However, we let external weeds and thickets and thorns make us unfruitful. But we can always do a little bit of gardening. You know, I'm looking out at the minute and the lawn's, you know, getting running away with it a little bit. There's a little bit of pruning needs done around the boundaries. But, you know, it can be done. It's not game over. We can redress that balance. So that's why I think that host of yours in particular resonated with me this morning. So we're going to pause and we'll be back in 30 seconds, Tim. And who knows what we're going to talk about then, even if we make it back, because nothing's guaranteed these days here, not even on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Welcome.
Coming up, important news.
TNT Radio News.
And that's the truth.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The war on censorship has intensified in Australia, where ex-boss Elon Musk has vowed to fight for the rights of the country's citizens. Meanwhile, the public feud has propelled X to the top of the charts to become the most downloaded news app in Australia, as more people there turn to the site for the truth. And there's anger brewing in America after a Republican was ordered to delete a video of his ex-account showing Democrats waving Ukrainian flags in the halls of Congress.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
You know, another thing, I suppose, keeping it to what's happening in the world at the minute, just as a reference point here, another thing that I'm very conscious of is desensitization, right? So if you get desensitized to, if you get exposed to a stimulus for long enough, even a wicked or an evil stimulus, it'll lose its shock value, I think. People are becoming accustomed to living in debt. People are accustomed to government corruption. People are accustomed to big pharma, you know, wickedness, DNR notices, genocide, engineered famines that are going on in the world. These are all horrific events, Jason. But I think at the minute we're being bombarded with them from so many angles and on such a frequent basis that I think we're becoming a little bit desensitized to it, and none more so than somewhere that you're very passionate about is what's happening in Gaza at the minute. For example, there's a humanitarian crisis going on there. There are, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people being displaced under a threat of death by ordnance being dropped on their heads, or by starvation or disease or some other horrific way of death. But the more this gets reported on, effectively, since October the 7th last year, you know, the fallout from that and everything that's been happening there with the imminent invasion of Rafah, you know, is it becoming almost, you know, people are just, there's no more recoiling and horror. It's more just shrugging shoulders. It's just, it's another day in Gaza. It's another day in Yemen. It's another day in Kiev. It's another day in Donbass. It's another day, wherever it happens to be in the world, more pain, more suffering, more death. Is one of the, I suppose you would say, the negative things towards being aware of what's happening at the minute, when you get overly exposed to it, that you become desensitized to it and, you know, you almost shrug your shoulders rather than recoil in horror anymore.
Now, well said, Rick. It's lovely to say that. I had a big chat with Basil Valentine on my show last night, who I respect greatly. He's a great historian, and he was doing a great expose of the whole thing. And you're right, we become desensitized to it. And that, I think, is one of the greatest dangers globally now. I'll come back to Gaza now, but globally, I think that is one of the greatest dangers. It's like if you're with an abusive relationship, you know, Rick, you get used to it. You can get used to being hit with a stick, you know. And if like an elephant in a circus, you can tie it to a post and then it'll tug and tug and tug, and eventually it'll give up and it won't even leave, you know. So I think we're in a very, very, very exciting place now, and also a very dangerous place. And, as you know, Stockholm syndrome, you know, people will start, you know, not only not exposing the governments that are doing these terrible things, they'll be protecting them. The next one will come in, like Matt Letizia said, different cheeks on the same backside, and they'll just grab them because we're like infants. We're like orphans that are looking for a mummy and daddy to tell us what to do. I mean, most people you see have been to school, Rick, and most people are programmed, brilliantly programmed, to do what they're told and look for someone to tell them what to do. They're like infantile people. Children are terrified, really. But that is very true. And I think that's what we're coming now. I would call it the great unmasking, the great unraveling, you know. And like you said about the religious thing, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think that's where we truly are. I think the real religion is comes from the word religare, which means to re-ligament, to recover, actually. And I think we're in the great recovery, Rick, where all things are being shown to us. And it is, we're coming back home to ourselves. And you're right, we've become horribly desensitized to the Gaza thing. Oh, it's just people getting their legs blown off. You know, I can look at it now because I look at so many things like that. And I've become desensitized to it. However, it does spur me on to do something about it and expose it. But they're exposing themselves now. This is the beautiful thing, Rick. Many people like ourselves for many years have been trying to expose this, being called anti-Semitic and all the rest of it. But now it's almost got the exposure of itself has got a sort of momentum, and many people who'd never talk about Gaza now, unfortunately, well, only 50,000 people have had to die for people to actually come to the streets and start talking about what Israel is doing now. All those people hopefully haven't died in vain. Although it's a tragedy what's going on there. But that's what it is. And I feel that's where we are now. We're coming back to that dislocated place within ourselves that won't look at these things. We'll be enforced to look at them, Rick, because they're in our faces now. And that's an exciting time. It's time. We can't stay asleep any longer and turn a blind eye to these atrocities. And if we see that outer picture, we've got to see the smaller picture of our own lives and our own societies, which is slavery, which is we've become used to it, you know. But the Great Awakening is here, and that's for sure. I'm very excited. But like any birth, as I've said many times, when a birth is taking place and the lead up to that new birth or that something new, there's always chaos and there's always great pain and anxiety and frustration and fear.
Yeah.
But something's changing. It won't stay the same as this. This too shall pass, and we will be stepping into a whole new paradigm. And that is taking place now. But like you can't sometimes see that hatching, but it's happening right now and it's very exciting.
Okay, we're nearly up to time, right? Time flies when you're having fun, as they say. And I must admit, I'm enjoying this conversation. It's a little bit cathartic for me, and it's doing me some good, irrespective of TNT and who's listening. This is good for Rick Munn today, so I'm endeavoring with it. You're a painter, okay? And I noticed you've done a painting. You posted it up on your Twitter page, and it's of a wave, okay? A wave, and it's on a beach. And I would say I'm very fortunate at the minute in that almost a year ago, I moved house and I moved down near the coast, okay? And for me personally, I have found the most settling, therapeutic thing for me to do, and I try and do it as often as I can, at least once if not twice a day, is go to the coast, to the beach, and just take it all in, right? It's immense. It's super medicinal for me. And when I saw that picture of your wave thing this morning, it just really, again, it struck a chord with me. Now, I know people might be listening going, well, I'm nowhere near the beach. I can't go and see the waves. And for a long time, I wasn't either. This is just where I'm at now. What do you say to someone, just in parting, and we've only got a couple of minutes left, right? Someone could be living in the inner city. Someone could be living in a high-rise block of flats. Someone could be looking out the window saying, well, I can see concrete and I can see a gray sky. But there's always, I believe, somewhere you can go to get a little bit more peace and a little bit more tranquility and reflect. What's your best advice? So how do you go looking for somewhere like that? And is it possible to find somewhere like that, irrespective of where you are?
It's ubiquitous everywhere. I think Eckhart Tolle said he's found such peace that you could tie him to a speaker and a loudspeaker in a nightclub and he could still find that peace. However, he did say but if he could leave, he would. So that's very important, firstly. Yeah. If you can leave a situation which where you're being abused or it's loud and noisy and you don't like it, leave if you can. But that piece you're talking about, Rick, is in everybody. It's ubiquitous all the time. My father used to go and sit by the beach. And myself, I've worked on myself now because I used to have so many problems and anxiety and too many noisy thoughts. I've found that place of peace within myself. So it goes everywhere with me. Even if I'm rushing for a train, it's there all the time. And people are scared of I'm going to do more programs on this for people. People are scared of their own silence, Rick, because the thoughts in their minds become normal. So the fear of their own silence, because then they've got to start analyzing themselves, you know. But I want to say, don't be frightened of the silence that you can find within yourself anywhere, whether it's on a train going to work. And in the nothingness, you find the somethingness. That's the irony of it, you know. And one quick analogy I want to say, there was an old analogy about a musk deer. They used to kill it for the smell of musk that came out of its navel. A real deer that used to go around smelling, looking for the smell that was coming from itself. So I want to say to people, don't look out there. It's in here, right here now. It's with you all the time, and you can find it. And don't be caught in, you've always got to be doing something. Being is where you find the peace. Just sitting like Rick next to the water and being. I better be somewhere. I got to do something. No, you haven't. Just being and not doing. You'll find that magnificence within yourself as well. It takes practice.
Yeah, and not doing something is not a crime either. Sometimes you can be guilted. You can guilt yourself into saying, oh, I should be. I haven't done anything for the last hour. I should have been out doing this. I could have been out doing that. Maybe not. Maybe the best thing for you to do is simply to do nothing and be very selfish and just take time to refresh yourself. Because if you haven't got your own batteries recharged, you ain't going to be any good to anybody else. Jason, listen, it's been a great chat this morning. I've enjoyed it immensely. And if you've enjoyed it too, check out Jason's website, especially Jason Liosatos, LIOSATOS.com. Go and check out what he's about and his podcast and everything else. And maybe it will benefit you, just simply give you a little bit of peace of mind and recalibrate you in this crazy inverted world in which we are living. So Jason, we're out of time. The bell, ding, ding, is being rung proverbially. But no doubt, if you're game for it, we will talk again, hopefully sooner rather than later. And I hope you have a great day, no matter what you're off to do now. Have a good one. And go out there and spread the love. Spread the love.
Thanks, TNT Rick. Thanks, Rick, for everything you're doing. Thanks, Rick, for your great work. Thanks, everyone at TNT. I really appreciate what you're all doing there. Thank you.
And thank you for your contribution. And we've got to take a break right now and speak of the devil, Basil Valentine, and he shall appear. He is up next here on TNT, so don't go away. We will be right back.
I said, could she die? And the doctor said she could. It was so scary.
When I started clawing at my neck and trying to breathe, and I thought, you know, what are we going to do if I die here? How's everyone going to go on?
When someone's gravely sick or injured in the bush, they rely on the Royal Flying Doctor Service. But now the Flying Doctor needs your help to fund vital medical equipment and supplies. Please search Flying Doctor online to give a regular gift of just $10. You can help equip the Flying Doctor's teams to respond to any emergency anywhere. Search Flying Doctor online. Become a part of the Royal Flying Doctor Service and help save lives in the bush.
I'm Belinda and this is Willard, and we were adopted in 2021. When we first met Todd, he was singing a song and I was like, wow, look at this kid with the biggest smile and he has a big heart to match.
The energy you give Todd, you get it back from Todd.
Yes.
Todd's a joy.
Yes,
Todd's
he is.
Really is a great joy.
I love him. You and you.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Informative and engaging.
Rick Munn.
Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ah, yes. Wednesday, the 24th of April, 2024, TNT. And thanks, by the way, for all the people that are the denizens of our live chat at the moment. It's extremely busy in there. Haven't been able to read out individual messages because obviously I've been in conversation, but had a quick scan during that break. And thank you very much, everyone for your contributions and simply being there and voicing your opinions. Basil, welcome back. It's Wednesday, the 24th of April. We're nearly into May. Where is the year going, my friend?
And where is the sun? You know, we're supposed to be having springtime, one of the wettest and greyest on record. Very difficult to get the three-year-olds ready for the classics, particularly the fillies, like a bit of sun on their back. But more importantly, I just want to pick up on part of your conversation with Jason there, talking about desensitization, which I think is extremely important. And a lot of people are suffering from what's called secondary post-traumatic stress disorder, certainly with respect to the atrocities in Gaza. But a story that's a story because it isn't a story that would make it even worse is the fact that, shamefully, the BBC have yet to report on the finding of the mass grave at the Nasser hospital. I can't bring myself to watch the 9 o'clock news or Newsnight anymore. I gave that up a long time ago when I realized it was wall-to-wall propaganda before and during the whole COVID farrago. But people who can bring themselves to watch the 9 o'clock news and Newsnight said that that story, which has been around now for a couple of days, it's finally made it onto the BBC website, but not the front page. You have to go to the specialist Middle East page to find it. That has not made it onto the main BBC news where, well, if that was anywhere else, it would be the lead story, Rick. So although we are becoming desensitized, nevertheless, for their own nefarious reasons, the likes of the BBC like to hide the worst of the atrocities in Gaza from us. Which moves swiftly on to the next thing I want to talk about very quickly in terms of news and news coverage. GB News can continue to use politicians as presenters, says Ofcom. So that means we're safe for another few weeks, Rick.
I tell you what, GB News, I don't know if you've seen some of the reports that are coming out from GB News at the minute, but I think they're on the ropes at the moment financially. I didn't realise the scale of that operation. Apparently they're laying, there's 40 odd people being laid off from the station. Their annual wages bill is approximately 20 million quid, apparently. Some very highly paid people on GB News. But the overall operation, I think they've got over 500, maybe 600 employees there. I didn't realize they were as big as that. I don't really follow them much like you and the BBC. I don't really follow what they're doing very much, Basil. I'm aware of their presence, but quite an operation. And, you know, they are regulated by Ofcom, and apparently they're looking towards going down the full streaming model again, because it's obviously very expensive having a fully kitted out studio there full of lighting engineers and, you know, sound engineers and all the background engineers and audio people and all that. It's a costly business bringing the news. So you're bringing it, you got to make sure you're on point with it, which they haven't been on many occasions.
Yeah, first of all, you're right. Likewise, Talk TV, they're going all online and losing Piers Morgan and all the rest of it. Running these operations is fiendishly expensive. There's no doubt about it. But most importantly, they don't even bring you the hard-hitting stuff like we do, Rick.
Nope.
So, you know, for all the millions that they spend, what's the content like? What's the analysis? I'm asking people in the chat room, would you rather have me or Jacob Rees-Mogg?
Be careful what you say. Ask those chat people, Basil, because the answers may not be what you expect. It could be a poll up there and Rees-Mogg could pip you at the proverbial post. Obviously, it would be a tongue-in-cheek reply. But yes, you know, let us know what you think in the live chat. We know what a lot of people do think anyway, but I think we have been unwavering here since we started off back in January 2022. There's been a lot of personnel have come and gone, and there's been a lot of extra things like the video streaming, but in essence, TNT has not changed at all since day one. And I don't know about you, if you've had a word in your ear or not, but I've always just been told, be yourself, tell the truth, be uncompromising, and I don't have any issues with editorial restrictions or, you know, who can and can't have on the show, what you and I can or can't discuss. And it's very liberating, and I'd say unusual in this day and age to be able to do that on a station like this.
enormously liberating. We are enormously privileged, Rick. And I often use the epithet the home of free speech when talking about us in correspondence with other people. And indeed it is. And long may it remain so. And I think we've come an awful long way in a very short space of time here on TNT.
Yeah, and we still have a long way to go in that, you know, the world's there for the taking. And I do have this belief, call me crazy, you know, but I believe we're either going to take over the world or we're going to implode. We will not tread water.
We're not going to implode.
We will not stay afloat in a sea of mediocrity here on TNT, Basil. I think the world's there for the taking, and I think we are primed and poised to take it. That's just my belief on it. And I'm a big believer in the old adage, shit or bust. Put it all in the house. Back, put everything on red in the house casino wheel or the roulette wheel. I'm not one for spreading it around. I like to go all in something. And if it works, it's going to be a spectacular success. And if it fails, it's going to be a spectacular disaster. I like that sort of thing. I like the old no risk, no reward principle.
It's your email address, isn't it?
But it is.
One thing I would say to everyone in the chat room is tell your friends, tell your colleagues, yes, tell your family, your co-workers how much you enjoy watching us. I've never done a little in-program promo like this before, but I think we deserve it. And, you know, yeah, I hope you're all enjoying listening and watching to us as much as we enjoy bringing you the news, which is after all our job. And so that's where we'll go now. Mm-hmm. And Rick and I share stories about what to talk about in advance of the program. And the one that we both want to focus on this morning, one of them anyway, is the announcement of a turning point in European security, apparently, with the UK said to increase defence spending to 2.5% by 2030. Now, that is a lot of money, and it comes as Rishi Sunak, on a trip to Germany, says he is hoping to deepen defence ties. He's meeting Chancellor Olaf Scholz today, a long-awaited trip to Berlin that Sunak hopes will deepen security operation after the announcement of the increase in defence spending. The UK and Germany are European powerhouses, he said in a statement. Together we are stronger, whether that is defending against Russian aggression or driving economic growth and technological advance. All the usual clichés there from the man soon to be out of office, Rick.
Yeah, and defense spending, I mean, there's no getting away from it. Every country has to factor it into their, you know, their budgets. But I think it's important here to highlight the fact, Basil, that he's talking about racking this up to 2.5% of GDP by the end of the decade. So again, 2030 is a very pivotal time point, or at least, you know, according to the, you know, the globalists, you know, Agenda 2030, the Great Reset and all that business. So everything seems to tie in and around that date of 2030. So what he's hoping for, or what he's aiming for, is spending by the end of the year of 2030 to reach 87 billion quid a year. Now, that's a huge amount of money, okay? But think about this also contextually in what has been spent on other things over the last 3 to 4 years. You remember the Test and Trace app from the NHS, the Track and Trace app to see if you had COVID and if you were near someone that had COVID or tested positive. Remember, they squandered 37 billion quid in that one, Basil, and that was just on an app. Technically speaking, that's effectively half of the defence budget for the entire country by the end of 2030, according to Rishi Sunak's mathematics. So to be able to conjure up billions, tens of billions, and throw them into a bottomless pit, it seems to be no problem for the British government at all.
You're right. I mean, that app, the figure for that app is absolutely off the charts. I mean, I don't know whether the National Audit Office have ever done a proper investigation into where all that money went, because I don't think it even ever existed, did it? Mm-hmm. I mean, by the time it was due to be introduced, it was already obsolete. It was the biggest non-starter of all time. And other countries were able to produce similar things for one hundredth or one thousandth of the cost, mm-hmm, rather like Michelle Moan and her useless personal protective equipment. But as regards the defence spending, well, you know, it's very dangerous. It's all really about the drumbeat for war. There's a very good piece in the Guardian by Jeremy Corbyn today, in which he recalls The Sleepwalkers, Christopher Clark's book about the outbreak of the First World War, mapping a multipolar world enthralled by imperialism and paranoia. He refused to blame a single power, but instead explained how political leaders narrowed the prospects for peace one misstep at a time and sleepwalked into a global catastrophe that left around 20 million people dead. If we do the same thing again this time, it could be a lot more than 20 million people dead because, of course, of the existence of nuclear weapons. Putin was warning NATO again about a direct confrontation only this week. And indeed, it does seem to be the case that, as in 1914, one misstep at a time, one little escalation, one little deterioration of confidence of the situation at a time is sleepwalking us into a potential direct conflict with Russia. And there are plenty of idiotic talking heads cheering it on.
Yeah, there are. And also, by the way, on this particular story, the defense spending will actually increase immediately. So they're going to rack it up to that level by the 2030. That's their target date, to raise it by 2.5%. But it says here, and this is coming from gov.uk's website, so defense spending will increase immediately and rise linearly. Talking also, we covered this story yesterday, with a further $500 million for Ukraine this year and an overall increase of £3 billion for Ukraine in the next financial year. So not just spending on British security, but also throwing billions over to Ukraine. And I noticed the story this morning as well, Basil, in America, that there has been a massive defense spending sign-off here, with, I think, 10, 20, 30 billion going to Israel to boost their, their forces and their defenses. The overall package was $96 billion, but I think about 35 or 40 billion of that is earmarked for Israel. So bad enough that amount of money is being spent on national defense over, for example, homelessness or health or education or infrastructure, but equivalent amounts are also being thrown overseas. And where's the auditing for that? You talk about the auditing for the app. You know, who the hell actually knows where these billions are going once they leave Britain and head towards Zelensky's begging bowl?
Oh, that's right. That $96 billion aid package was approved by the Senate last night. It includes $26 billion to continue the war against the women and children of Gaza. But there is at least huge pushback later today. In fact, tonight I'm guest hosting for Patrick Henningsen at 9 p.m. here on TNT, and we'll be doing a deep dive into exactly what's going on in the United States, where the biggest anti-war movement since Vietnam is gathering pace on university campuses and schools all around the country, because people are frankly repulsed by the fact that Congress seems to be entirely in the grip of the warmongers and genocide heirs. I want to pivot now to another subject, which I know is very dear to your heart. Pfizer and BioNTech have gone to court in London in a bid to revoke Moderna's patents over technology key to the development of the vaccines for COVID-19, the latest leg of a global legal battle, which began yesterday. There are billions of dollars involved. Moderna made $6.7 billion last year from its vax called SpikeVax. Sounds rather spiteful, doesn't it, Rick? I don't want any SpikeVax, thank you. What's interesting is the way that the mythology of the vaccines is woven into an article like this, referring casually to how they saved millions of lives.
Yeah, allegedly. And again, how do you audit that? That's the one thing, Basil, that always stuck in my throat whenever we were reporting what the government were saying about the so-called vaccines, or the COVID vaccines. They say they have saved millions of lives. They've prevented tens of millions of people dying across the world. There isn't a shred of evidence that they've even saved a single life. In fact, the evidence is increasingly mounting up that they're killing people left, right, and center. Excess deaths and increased spikes of myocarditis and immune diseases and sudden deaths among the young in particular, and the rise of turbo cancers, you know, has all been linked directly or indirectly to this mass jab campaign. So rather than, to me, that's the ultimate gaslighting. We talk a lot here about gaslighting, to say that they've saved millions of lives when in reality the opposite could well be true is surely a masterclass in gaslighting by Big Pharma.
Absolutely, it's off the charts. And talking of gaslighting, one other story I want to slip in before we close. The United Kingdom is accused by Amnesty International of deliberately destabilizing human rights globally, warning that Britain will be judged harshly by history for its failure to prevent civilian slaughter in Gaza. The UK accused of destabilizing human rights for its own political ends. Who knew, Rick?
Surely that can't be the British government we're talking about. Surely that can't be the same people that told us Iran and Iraq was full of weapons of mass destruction and a million Iraqis died off the back of it. It couldn't be the same British government, surely, Basil. Amnesty International, you know, piping that same old tune, but we've been hearing that tune for a very, very long time. Listen, the music's playing. Speaking of tunes being played, that means it's time to wrap this one up. Many thanks to you. Check out Basil tonight on the Patrick Henningsen Show, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. UK time, and we'll talk again tomorrow. I'll be back on the other side here on TNT, Today's News Program.